Chapter 4. Caught in the Crossfire. The city air was thick with mist, clinging to my coat as I walked away from the Orpheum Lounge. Leo's offer echoed in my mind, a siren song promising freedom at a price that could be my soul. $5 million, a new life. It was everything I had ever dreamed of. The finish line to a race I was exhausted from running, but to earn it, I had to willingly walk back into the lion's den and act as a viper striking from the inside. My mind raced, weighing the two monstrous options before me. Ethan's possessive ownership versus Leo's manipulative alliance. One wanted to imprison my body, the other my will. Both saw me as a tool. Was it better to be a gilded trophy on a mantelpiece or a sharpened knife held in a steady hand? I clutched the cheap burner phone in my pocket, the plastic feeling both like a lifeline and a bomb. Before I could process anything, before I could even begin to formulate a plan, a shadow detached itself from a darkened doorway beside me. Miss Vance. The voice was deep, calm, and utterly devoid of emotion. I spun around, my heart leaping into my throat. A man stood before me, built like a mountain in a tailored suit. He was handsome in a severe, forgettable way, his presence radiating an aura of quiet, lethal efficiency. He was no random stranger, he was a professional. Before I could speak or run, another man appeared silently at my other side. I was flanked, trapped. There was no aggression in their posture, no overt threat, which was somehow more terrifying. It was the calm confidence of predators who knew their prey was already caught. "Mr. Thompson would like to see you," the first man said. His eyes flicked down to my coat pocket, a clear, unmistakable gesture. He knew about the phone, he knew about the meeting. Panic, cold, and absolute seized me. This wasn't a coincidence, this was an interception. My secret meeting hadn't been secret at all. "I have nothing to say to him," I managed, my voice tight. The man who I assumed was Ethan's head of security didn't even blink. That wasn't a request. He opened the rear door of a black, imposing limousine that had slid silently to the curb beside us. It was the kind of car that absorbed light, a void on wheels. The interior was a cavern of black leather and shadows. My fight-or-flight instinct screamed, but there was nowhere to run. To struggle here on a public street would be a scene, one that would end with me being dundled into the car anyway. With the last shred of my dignity, I slid onto the cold leather seat. The door closed with a heavy, final thunk, sealing me inside. The world outside muted, the city noise fading to a distant hum. I was in a soundproof box, being transported to my executioner. The head of security sat opposite me, his hands clasped in his lap, his gaze fixed somewhere over my shoulder. He didn't speak, he didn't need to. His silence was a statement in itself, a testament to the inescapable reach of his boss. The ride was an eternity of suffocating quiet. I watched the familiar streets of my city pass by like scenes from a life that was no longer mine, my mind frantically trying to assemble a defense, a lie, anything. But what can I say? I had been caught red-handed. The limousine didn't take me to my apartment. It descended into a private underground garage, stopping before a discreet elevator. I was escorted out of the car and into the steel box, which rose with sickening speed. When the doors opened, we were not in a lobby, but directly inside the stark, renorist expanse of Ethan Thompson's penthouse. It was less a home and more a monument to power. Walls of glass revealed a god's eye view of the city. The furniture was sparse, architectural, and brutally expensive. There was no clutter, no warmth, no sign of a life lived, only of a kingdom ruled. And there, standing before the vast window with his back to me, was the king. Ethan didn't turn around immediately. He let me stand there, flanked by his men, marinating in my fear. The silence stretched, thick with my guilt and his unspoken rage. When he finally turned, his face was a mask of cold fury. His dark eyes weren't burning with heat, they were frozen, chips of obsidian promising a cold, painful demise. "Leave us," he commanded, his voice lethally soft. His security detail vanished as silently as they had appeared. He took a step towards me, his gaze so intense it felt like a physical weight. "I gave you a choice, Scarlet," he began, his tone deceptively calm. "I offered you safety protection, a life without debt or fear, and in return, I asked for one thing, loyalty. He stopped in front of me, invading my personal space. He held up his hand. Lying between his thumb and forefinger was the cheap burner phone I had bought. He must have had his man lift it from my pocket in the car. And this, he continued, his voice dropping to a venomous whisper, is what you give me? You run straight to the man who threw you to the wolves and you beg for scraps from his table. You gave me no choice, I retorted, my own anger flaring to meet his. You claimed me like an object, a trophy. What was I supposed to do? Sit quietly in my cage until you decided to show up. A muscle feathered in his jaw. You were supposed to be smart enough to recognize a winning side. Instead, you crawled back to the loser. What did he offer you? Money? A fantasy of escape? He didn't need me to answer. He already knew. His omniscience was terrifying. It stripped away all my defenses, leading me raw and exposed. He would have used you and disposed of you, Scarlet. You would have been another loose end. I was offering you your life. This isn't a life, I spat. It's a prison. Then you have no idea what a real prison is, he snarled, the last of his control snapping. But I can certainly show you. In a flash, he closed the remaining distance between us. His hand shot out, not to strike me but to grip the back of my neck, his fingers digging into my skin. He backed me against the cold, unyielding glass of the panoramic window. The city glittered 1,000 feet below, a beautiful and different witness. My heart hammered against my ribs, a frantic bird trapped in a cage of bone. You think you have a choice? He hissed, his face inches from mine. You think you can play games with me and Leo Sterling and walk away? The illusion of choice is over. Your 2 days are over. Your old life is over. He pinned my hands against the glass above my head with one of his own, his strength absolute. His other hand snaked around my waist, yanking me hard against him. I could feel every powerful line of his body, the coiled tension, the barely restrained violence. Then his mouth came down on mine. It was nothing like the possessive kiss in the hotel. This was pure, undiluted rage. It was a punishment, a brand, a brutal claiming meant to obliterate any thought of defiance. It was meant to break me. I struggled, twisting against him, but it was futile, like a moth fighting a storm. And then, to my horror, a familiar, traitorous heat bloomed deep in my belly. My terror began to mingle with a dark, unwilling arousal. His anger was a potent aphrodisiac, his dominance a call to a self-destructive part of me I refused to acknowledge. My body, the one tool I had always controlled with perfect precision, was betraying me completely, arching into his touch even as my mind screamed in protest. He broke the kiss, leaving me gasping, my lips bruised, my body trembling. He stared down at me, his eyes blazing with a mixture of fury and a dark, triumphant satisfaction. He could feel my body's response. He knew he was winning. You belong to me, he growled, the words a gravelly promise against my skin. Not Leo, not yourself, me, and I will burn this entire city to the ground before I let anyone else have you. He released my hands, and I slumped against the window, my strength gone. The last vestiges of my defiance had been scorched away, replaced by a terrifying, intoxicating certainty. I was caught. I was his. The game wasn't over. It had just entered a new, far more dangerous stage, and the crossfire was the only place I was allowed to be.